You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
You're about to listen to Goosebuds. This is Chad Quant. This feed is free, but if you want to hear these episodes earlier and ad-free, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/goosebuds, which also gives you bonus episodes, our Discord, and more. Please subscribe to support the show. Now enjoy this episode of Goosebuds. How you been, Elspeth? What's been going on with you?
I've been good, dude. I actually just got back from Portland a couple days ago, and it was really, really beautiful.
What was the reason for Portland, other than just to see the beautiful side of the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, that's really it. My friend and I had been wanting to travel there for a little bit, and we'd heard good things about the area, and I never really had gone myself. And I wasn't sure what to expect, but it's a smaller city. I thought it was going to be really, really big, like a San Francisco size or maybe Chicago. Yeah. And it's not. It's for sure like a smaller, big city. I was really impressed. We just went to just hang out and, oh, dude, we got this log cabin, and not really log, but definitely like a wooden cabin. I'll have to send you a picture.
Like faux wood in the shape of logs?
You know, it's like plywood. Yeah. No, it was beautiful. They had like a loft. There was a little gas fireplace stove thing. It was so cozy. It was so freaking cozy. I had a great time.
I know Portlandia makes fun of that area, but also it does seem like even all of the joke versions of Portlandia sounds pretty good.
Yeah, like, right. I've never seen the show myself, so I feel like now I gotta watch it to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it is so, oh man, I was in love with it, dude. I loved the food. I thought the people were really cool. And I'm also a big fan of anything that has just like loads of flowers everywhere. So flower petals in the air, Chad. It was amazing.
Well, I mean, I guess as long as you don't have allergies, you're good. Yeah. I mean,
if you have allergies, it might be a different story. Yeah.
You went up for, I'm assuming, Seattle for PAX several times, right?
Yeah. I've been to PAX a couple times for sure. For sure.
Similar. I mean, I haven't been to Portland yet, but I think the few times I got to go up there in Seattle, I'm like, oh my God, this is everything I've always wanted. It's like a little bit gloomy, but there's, I don't know. They're just, it didn't feel as claustrophobic as other cities I've been to.
And sure.
I'm still pining for the Pacific Northwest.
I don't know if
there's pines up there, but I'm pining for it.
Literal pines and also pining. I feel that on a spiritual level, dude. The trees are just, oh, the magnificence. I kept walking and just pointing out everything. I'm like, look at that. Look at it. It's amazing.
I don't want to dox you, but you moved out of Indiana recently, right?
I did.
Hometown.
I did. I moved out of Indiana, moved out of the hometown, and I still visit, of course, because I got a lot of friends and fam back up there. But I'm in Cincinnati now, so Southwest Ohio. It's treating me pretty grand.
What's and, like the sell me on Ohio, because other than I know Cedar Point in Sandusky.
So yeah, we got like, Cedar Point. Heck yeah, we got Cedar Point in Sandusky. And as a whole, I can definitely sell you on Ohio. I think it's got a pretty big population, and that already to me, I'm like, I like states that have a lot of people in them, because more people for me means that we get exposure to different cultures, different food, different music, all that jazz. So I really like Ohio. It's got a lot of people in it. Cincinnati has got some of the friendliest people I've ever met in my life. I feel like there's a sense of community here that's like, it's like camaraderie. If you're into sports at all, like this city,
yeah, a little bit.
So Chad, do you like the sport?
You know, I think I have a little bit of not trauma with it, but like it was forced on me my entire life, and I think I played. I my dad made me play a sport every season growing up. Summer swimming, was it spring baseball, fall football, winter basketball, and I was only good at like one of those. And it really just started becoming this like, well, this is just a job, right? Like, this is just a
it's just work.
But I enjoy like watching a good sport. I think I'm almost more into like the background drama of stuff. Like maybe this is too far. I went down a rabbit hole, Elspeth, on. The drama over the NFL draft of Deion Sanders' son not getting drafted. Is that anything that was on your radar this last week?
I gotta admit, it is not, but I'm deeply curious because any sort of rabbit hole implies that there's larger forces at work here, and I'm curious as to what the story is.
I can pitch it to you. It was a little bit of, I don't know this guy, but you know, Deion Sanders, a famous football player, and now I guess he became a coach of a college team. Oklahoma, maybe?
Okay, but LA.
His son was the QB, which is already weird, and became this sort of like, you know, football personality type, big old hype around him into the draft.
Okay.
And TikTok that I went down was like a whole sub, you know, culture analyzing how Shadar Sanders was his name.
Okay.
All the hype over he's going to go in the first round pick. And look at this, he planned this party where he built custom furniture to hold all the different hats that he might get drafted by. Because, you know, when you get a team, you put on the hat immediately of the team you get drafted by. And you got, like, people on stilts to show up. This is going to be a big old party for him getting drafted in the first round.
Oh,
he didn't get drafted.
Whoa.
And, like, oh, he didn't get drafted. Oh, why? God, oh, maybe because he's got an ego and he didn't go to the drafting combine where all the scouts get to watch you play. And maybe he's an asshole and I don't know this guy, but I noticed there's still clearly a like a audience thing of like seeing someone who is stepping up and has a big ego getting knocked down several pegs. And that's all the NFL like internet I saw for the last week was like, and then he finally went to the fifth round, and I think actually he's maybe going to Cincinnati. I think that was the last thing I saw. Yeah, because I saw people like, oh, after all this, he's going to Cincinnati. Cincinnati sucks. Like, that was kind of the joke of it.
No! Oh, man. That's funny.
Yeah, so I follow some of that a little bit. I think I follow, like, wrestling news more nowadays. Like, the drama of that's really interesting. What are your sports? Like, what are your go-tos?
Well, you know what's funny? I kind of, like, this exact opposite from being like forced into it. I kind of got into sport by osmosis. So my friends that were really into certain sports, I'd be like, well, gosh darn, sure, I'd love to watch Wimbledon with you. I mean, I don't know anything about it, but why not? And there's like this, I love tennis. I absolutely love tennis. That's probably, here's the thing. I do not follow sport. I love tennis.
We sound very cool by continuously calling it sport.
But like, I got into watching games and sports and stuff like that much, much more far along, like maybe in my late 20s. And I really got into football, like soccer football. And I moved to Cincy, and they have an amazing football club here, FCC. It's amazing. I love watching. I'll call it soccer for safety, but I love watching soccer. It's probably one of my favorite. It's because I want to be that guy that calls it football and be like, because it is football, because I'm going to be an elitist about it.
The football.
You kick it with your foot, and so that's why it's called football. But I love watching it. It's so exciting. It's so exciting. I just went to a game yesterday. This dude, Kevin Denke, did a bicycle kick. Goal in real time. It was so amazing. So a bicycle kick is like where you jump up and you
ride a bicycle onto the court.
You ride a literal bicycle onto the course.
Yeah.
and you shoot it out of your basket. Yeah, it's a bicycle kick. Is like I was stunned. It was like the most acrobatic thing I'd ever seen, and just like to bear witness to that is like, wow, this is really truly amazing. And I'm not saying like football where somebody's carrying the ball and running it a very, very long distance isn't also fucking impressive, because it is. But I find that there's a certain spark about soccer that is it's quick. It's really quick, and it's so...
That is so not the reputation that soccer... I feel like the common complaint is like you're watching a 5-hour match for one goal,
oh
right?
Oh my gosh, like that's kind of... I feel like I'm every second is like, it just counts.
No, I think it isn't like guys are just standing there on the pitch or whatever it's called, but yeah. I think I'm always craving all sport, like all kind of down the road modern sports. I don't know. I think it's time for most of them to get like a little extra rules, like multi-ball or something. Oh, or like
yes,
you know, just throwing in some like crazy things where like, oh, maybe now hey, if you shoot from the half point line of the basketball, that's worth 50 points. I don't know, not to make it like Quidditch, because fuck JK Rowling, but like just some
right,
just some extra, I don't know, oomph to kind of catch things up with what, like, gamer. We're both gamers.
Gamers, yes.
With a Z. Yes. I think, like, throwing in some bonus rounds kind of thing.
Hell yeah, dude. I think that we absolutely should decorate these games with, like, this has been around for a really long time. Let's establish some new stuff. Let's bring in some wild card. Maybe if, like, the ball, if someone catches it in the audience, they're legally allowed to, like, throw it back onto the field. And
yeah.
It's in play.
Oh, I just saw that. I just saw this, Elspeth. I watched. There's some. I'm blanking on the name of it. It's, like, in Florida. It's a minor team baseball league.
Okay.
Where
okay.
If a fan catches a foul ball, they're out.
Whoa.
Like it's not a home run or anything like where that sometimes, you know, if it goes over the line.
I love that, dude.
Yeah, like it's like almost encouraging the fans to get more involved, which is probably dangerous.
What if you're like, haha, just kidding, and then you take off your jersey and it's actually the other team and like,
oh my god, that's 10 points. That's somehow 10 points. Or like being able to go. Yeah, we're being able to like go backwards, right? Like let's say you get to third base and you tag home and you get 1 point. You could stop there, or you could run back to third and start getting double points, right? Like,
yes,
that could be interesting.
It could
right?
be. It could be. I like a good crowd too. You know, the energy for me is really like what makes it exciting, and feeling other people's like, oh my gosh, it's like it's a, I don't know how to describe it. It's really electric. It's an experience. I mean, being in a stadium is one thing, but then also having like a team mindset, right? Because again, I really didn't do a lot of that. Like in school, I played tennis, but that was it. That was as competitive as I got.
Interesting.
It
really, were you good?
I was okay. My school wasn't really. We weren't very tennis focused. There was
not to name it. Was this South Bend, right? So this was like clay or something.
Washington. And Washington. I had a great time. I really did. I had a great time up until junior year when I stood up and I walked out and I was like, I'm done. I don't even want to graduate. I didn't graduate high school. I left. I was like,
oh, I didn't know that.
I'm gonna skip senior year. I'm gonna go right to college because I do not want any more of this. And so that's what I did. I was like, forget this. Let's just go right to college. And it was
how did your like parents and family all roll with that?
My parents were very supportive because they were like, I was like turbo homeschooled. So they were like, whatever, you know, you feel is right. They were very encouraging. And my mom especially was like, hey, if you want to like, you know, come home and study for college instead of being in high school, feel free to do that. Because I also chose to go to high school because I was like, I want to go and have friends. And then I got friends and I was like, cool, now I have friends. I'm leaving. I don't want to finish trigonometry. I don't think I'm ever going to be using this. maybe to read House of Leaves. I know that's also another thing we have to
talk
about.
Hell yeah, what a segue to House of Leaves.
Oh my God, dude. Oh, okay. I have a lot to say about this book. Was there anything you would like to get into before we get into this?
Yeah, but by the way, are we talking about House of Leaves this episode? I thought we were talking about Backrooms.
Or we could talk about Backrooms.
Oh my God, Elspeth, are we doing both? Okay, this is becoming a weird.
Can we do both? Can we do both? Because
let's get into this.
Let's do this because I have many words. The Backrooms is one of my all-time favorite universes, whatever you want to call it, internet verse,
yeah.
The section of the internet that is just
a creepypasta, maybe creepy is still pasta. The term for it. Yeah.
Yes. The creepypasta that really developed into something uniquely terrifying. And I think for me, what really hit was the first time I saw the Backrooms stuff was that I really had a long think about this because Backrooms, the first time I saw it was on TikTok, right? I saw like, oh, you're in level negative 513. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what does this even mean? Like, this is like some dreams that I've had or something, right? Where you're like, you're trapped in like a grocery store or something. You're trapped in a mall and you can't get out.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's evocative of that, of a childhood terror for me, where like I remember those lights, like this fluorescent lighting that's used in like a lot of Backrooms lore, this really like dark buzzing sound. It's like, it's basement, like it's dim, it's dank, you know, you can't really find an exit. It's like an old,
it's neglected, old, right? It is neglected. Like you're not in a safe place.
You're not in a safe place.
Partially because maybe there's asbestos in all the walls.
Oh my gosh, yes. Maybe
let's set that for any listeners. By the way, welcome to Goosebuds.
Hey!
I should intro you. This is I think we're just so casual because this is both not the first time Elspeth and I have tried to record this episode.
I just wanted to say, I'm so sorry, Chad.
It's totally okay. It's totally okay. Even a pro like yourself gets the audio files messed up.
Oh, good heavens.
Elspeth, I'm your host, Chad Quant, here to invite guests on to talk about things that give them goosebumps. That's right. We're not just covering R.L. Stine stuff anymore. And to cover, I'd say, probably the most modern thing we've ever talked about on the show, unless we're covering, like, you know, the Goosebumps TV show, which still has its roots in the 90s, is The Backrooms. Joined by Elspeth Eastman, acclaimed voice actor, former Indiana local that I knew back from my game store days. Doing much better than either of us were doing back in South Bend. And yeah, Elspeth, like you kind of called out at The Backrooms, and then we both realized Big Red House of Leaves, which I think is my favorite book of all time. So we should definitely touch upon that.
Yes.
But I guess House of Leaves came first because I read it in high school, which was probably like 2005.
Oh gosh.
Or something. I don't know when you read it.
So very recently, actually. I started it a couple years ago and then got all the way through it finally. And it's an adventure that it's not.
Yeah,
just
I don't know how you
book.
Stopped.
It was overwhelming. It was genuinely overwhelming. I was like, oh my God, there's so much going on in this. And I need to take time to parse and absorb, because not only are you reading it, you're learning also because the book is peppered with all of these other flavors and footnotes and quotes and other like it's its own universe, right? Like The Backrooms.
Mark
does with this book is that he inserts so much bibliography, right? That's throughout the book.
It's all fake.
But
that's the craziest part about all of it.
Oh my God, it's amazing that it presents itself as fact, right? It presents itself as scientific. Here's this missive, this information that's backing up the story. But even the story is not, it's not a story. It's just it's documented, right? This is a documentation.
Trying to explain the framing device. And it's the most pretentious looking. It's so hard to recommend House of Leaves because they'll crack it open.
Dude, yes.
And they'll see different type font inside other type font.
Yep.
They'll flip to a page that's just blank.
Yes.
Or just has the word house in blue.
Yes.
And that's the only.
Yes.
I get it. It looks so pretentious.
I thought that same thing. I'm like, okay, what am I really getting into here? Am I certain I want to sign up for something like this? And it is like so profoundly scary. It's so scary.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't have to get too far into, honestly, unless we want to, the plot of House of Leaves, because I think maybe just describing sort of the different stories it's bringing up to you, and it really is a meta-narrative thing of the core story, the inner layer of the book, is a text transcription, very kind of clinical, describing a found footage tape called the Navidson Record, in which family led by a photographer, a famous photographer, which is also kind of the theme of his own story, before Civil War came out, about like, oh, are photographers really that innocent for what they photographed? The Navidson Record tackled that first. But I don't mean Marvel Civil War, I mean the A24 Civil War. But yeah, it's like him discovering in his house that they just moved into. There is a door suddenly appearing that they've never noticed before. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry if this is the wrong order, Elspeth, you've read it more recently than I am. But essentially, like, kind of slowly burning, like, wait, this room doesn't make sense because it's, like, three-fourths inches wider on the inside than it is on the outside. Yes. I measured it 100 times. This doesn't make any sense.
Ugh.
And almost as if, like, the house knows it's caught.
Yes!
Starting to reveal, like, hey, here's a doorway, goes into a hallway that should take you outside. But instead, it's they call it, like, the 5.5-minute hallway because it takes 5.5 minutes to walk down.
God.
Ashen, barren, there's no details to it. It almost feels like earth, but it's not.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and exploring that, and that opens this whole big rabbit hole of, like, the house starting to open up, and is there something in it? It consumes him and his family, both figuratively and literally.
Yep.
But then, I think that's the coolest story, right? Yes. That's, like, I think the one everyone always talks about. Outside of that is the notes mm-hmm. of a guy who has found this book mm-hmm. in his house. An old man named Zampano mm-hmm. was writing this, I guess. I guess he was writing the transcription. And then this young kid, Johnny Truant, is reading Zampano's transcriptions and now writing his own notes in the margins of it as he becomes consumed by the idea of the house and starting to think that he's, like, seeing things and he's got a stripper he's in love with. Mm-hmm. I think the Johnny Truant stuff's not nearly as interesting as the other stuff. I don't know about you.
Yes, I would 100% agree with that. Usually the Johnny Truant stuff, if I see, because it's in a different font, right? So the font choice, the color choice, it lets you know that this is a different narrator, that you're reading this from a different perspective. And I always skim it, not like,
you can just skip it.
I try not to because I really am like, okay, I want to absorb what this book is giving me in every detail because I started reading it for travel where I'm just like, I'm just going to bring this on a plane. And let me tell you how embarrassing that is to try and read this book on a plane because you're like trying to turn it over and then at some point, at some point you have to flip it and be like, okay, wait, I'm really squinting at this. It does not read like a traditional novel. It's really not a book.
No.
It's like a...
It's almost like choose your own adventure a little bit.
You just... The word's out of my mouth. Choose your own adventure. That's it. Literally that.
It's the coolest book of all time, I think.
So
and
cool. It's so
and speaking
cool.
of other books, it's funny you mentioned the type font. Yeah, I think you can totally, like, skim the Truant stuff. I kind of do the same thing in certain fantasy. God, if Kevin was listening to Goosebud still, he'd kill me. I think there's times where I read Lord of the Rings,
uh-huh.
and you can tell based on the italics, like, oh, this is dwarven lineages.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna kind of skip through this part and get back to the adventure. Okay, I can tell where it is.
Yeah,
that kind it does give you that freedom, which almost feels more set for a new audience that has low attention spans.
Yes.
But I love the back rooms. I'd encourage every single Goose Buddy listening to read that book, give it a chance. But maybe the most back rooms thing to kind of bring it back into that topic too is the idea of annotations, right? There mm-hmm. are, throughout House of Leaves, we already mentioned there are numerous, you'll be like, sometimes reading a page and like one paragraph of it is the actual story. And the rest are like, annotation 12, if you read down this 12, like, oh, this is referencing a study in 1982 about an explorer so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then like, none of it's real.
Yeah.
But like, it's so well written. I started, when I was reading this book in high school, I had to double check to make sure like, was the Navidson record a found tape that I don't know about? Because it's referencing, I think Stephen King has quotes in the book that aren't real Stephen King quotes. Like
Anne Rice, like authors. We have like physicists, people who are well-known names that are potentially being interviewed for their perspective.
Oh, yeah. Or seeing the tape, right? Yeah. They're seeing the footage and weighing in on it.
Yeah. It's wild. It's just wild. How I love what you said too, how there's... Because I don't want to get into like the meat of it. Because really, it's a chilling book, and it starts off almost unassuming to where you're reading it. You're like, okay, this is just giving it me information. I'm just getting information. I'm getting a recollection, and the way what did you say? Where the house knows it's caught. Where there's that such a tiny amount of it being bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Yeah, if Doctor Who was scary, right? Like, the TARDIS was scary.
If the TARDIS was scary, dude, that's exactly it. It's like, this is defying reality in the most chilling, like nefarious, malicious way. You're like, that's
and it's wrong. Shifting, this right? Like it's constantly like, oh, if you open the door and close it, it'll be different the next time. And trying to, I swear I'm going to connect all of this to the back rooms because I want to talk about back rooms too. Like the idea of, I watched all the videos. I watched all the YouTube videos of back rooms. I'm down to discuss, but.
Oh my God, really?
Amazing. But I think the House of Leaves stuff is more compelling, so it's easier to go to, is there, you know, Mark Danielewski. Sorry if I'm getting his name wrong. Like
Danielewski.
Yeah. And it's only a book of his writing. He did such a good job of like making some very understandable characters, right? Like Davidson himself, and I think it's weird because it's tied into reality. I mentioned he's a photographer who has this guilt over removing himself from his art, right? That like, and there's a photo they reference that like got him on a bunch of awards of a starving child.
Yeah, that kid.
As a vulture is like creeping up on him in the background, and he took a photo and then like didn't help that kid. That's a real photo. Like I looked that up. It's not by a photographer named Davidson, but that's a famous photo. So that also leads into this like, fuck, so how much of this are you...
How much is
it doesn't feel exploitive. Yeah. But how much of it is real? And, and letting that be in the family, like you feel for these kids, you're getting kind of pulled into it. The wife who's like, I think he does a good job of not making her like a nagging wife character. She's genuinely like, what are we doing? Let's just get the fuck out of here.
She doesn't understand why they're hanging around. And it's,
why are they obsessed with us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Davidson and his brother Tom are like, we need to know. We need to know what's
so good.
So fucking good. And we need to know what's going on in this house. And I, you know what's so weird, Chad, is that I keep putting myself into both Karen and Davidson's shoes, where Karen's absolutely terrified for good reason, but I would be so compelled. I'd be like, what is going on? I need to understand. I need to know how this is possible. I need to conduct experiments. Like, this is something hitherto unheard of. It's just this big house in Virginia, this unassuming property that they move into, and then they somehow find just horrors, you know, like and oh, it's so good. It's just so well written.
I don't remember in the book, do they ever call the realtor? Do they ever be like, yo, what up with this?
I think what's going on? I believe one of the most in-depth they go into it is like the how the property was formed, and apparently it was like it was a part of something that was also shifting. So there are records and I think were hinted that the house is not, it hasn't always been this way. Like there were properties here that also changed. Like it's not just like it's this thing. It's like this area. There's something wrong with the foundation. And I also love how they go into like the mineral deposits, right? Like they carbon date the house, and they actually take the minerals to someone who carbon dates this, and it's like, oh well, this sample is maybe 1,000 years old, but this one is billions. This actually is older than the universe. Yeah. And where did you say you came by this material? Like, oh, this was found in like the depths of the home, right? So it's just it's like the terror of the void of the universe in your house.
Yeah, and also we haven't mentioned that there's. I think it's so interesting because I was frustrated with this part as a kid. A teenager, that there's an allusions to a beast in there, right?
Yes,
and like,
yes, a roar,
and a lot
right?
of references
like
to the Minotaur,
yeah.
Or like seeing maybe scratches or feeling like something's hunting them, and there are allusions to like the Minotaur in the maze. And I mean, as we're spoiling, there's no real monster, right? There's maybe something, right? I think there's like early on Johnny Truant, when he starts to think like that the thing is haunting him, he'll goes into like a dark room and he swears something slashing at his shirt, but there's never the third act of the horror movie of like, and then here's the monster, you gotta kill it with a gun.
We do read it in a record about, there was a transcript, but it wasn't, was it Reston? Not Reston.
That sounds right. Yeah. I mean, Reston, as one of the multiple people he brings in to help him explore the place.
Exactly. So I believe it was there was an account from Reston where he hears something very, very close to his, where he's got a camp for the night or whatever, you know, because you can't even tell if it's night or day wherever they are.
They're like spelunking down there with like ropes and multi-day explorations.
I'm so curious, what did that look like in your mind? Because for me, I won't spoil too much, but what I will say is that there's the way the book describes the emptiness that you feel when you're walking around in this house. It's not like carpet. There's no windows.
No,
you are in like a massive place void of any walls, and it's dead silent. There's no wind. So I really have trouble picturing that, because I'm like, well, how do you picture pitch black that also has a floor?
And there's times,
you know, it's so hard.
There's times where, like, they'll go into the stair. Remember, there's like a kind of a staircase that seems infinite, and they have to take like multiple nights just to camp on it. Like, you're like going down a mountain.
Yes.
And before the staircase even starts to elongate and like trap them down there.
Yep.
Where it seems like there's almost like an infinite expanse, right? Like, the light isn't hitting anything.
Yes.
And I thought about this a lot, Elspeth, where no one would ever give me the keys to this, but I was like, if I ever had a dream adaptation project, it would be House of Leaves. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's impossible to do. I think it's almost like no way could you do the multi-level Zampano and Johnny Truman. I think you'd have to just do found footage Davidson record. But there'd be something kind of lost in not being able to capture, I think, some of that endless abyss on a camera, right? Maybe you could cheat it a little bit. I've seen movies that very clearly were inspired by House of Leaves, but
I think
I don't know.
Yeah, I think you'd have to present it in a way that is, gosh, digestible for an audience, because it's not digestible. You're looking at something that is both finite and infinite all at once.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how do you capture that on camera? I guess it's like I picture a very, very, very poorly lit expanse where it's just you see floor, maybe, right? That's the most you can see floor. Yeah. And if you don't know the parameters that you're working with as an audience, how are you able to tell this is a massive room? You'd have to be told. You'd have to be like, there'd have to be exposition.
Yeah, you'd have to have a character with a light, like, watch me run down this hallway for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, I know you can say these things, and maybe this is actually a great way to transition into, I think, is the closest to the video version of this, which is the back room.
Yes, yes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Funny enough, this, I think our first conversation Elspeth like talk about was Lethal Company, which is almost like later in the hierarchy or the evolutionary chain of the storytelling of liminal spaces.
Absolutely. It deals with a lot of that. A lot of that, like, but you open the door and something else is there that you're not expecting, right? Totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. Back rooms, from what, you know, I understand, but I try to do a little more research on it. I think I've seen it for several years. It started on 4chan. Rest in piss 4chan. You're dead now, I think.
Rest in piss.
That's what I understood in the news. Is on an ex-paranormal board of just sharing scary images, both found and, you know, photo manipulated. Mm. Funny enough, I think, like, you know, Slender Man was the same thing. It was like something awful. Just people kind of crowdsourcing an internet horror. In 2019, I don't know, have you seen the original scary image of the back rooms, Elspeth?
I have, yes. It's that, it looks like deep fried at this point. It's very yellowish. fluorescent lighting. It's a poor carpet. There's walls that kind of are just there. It looks like you're in a shopping mall almost, where you might be in like the back room of like a Lane Bryant or something, and this is where they keep all the clothes. But it's just poorly lit. Yeah. It's just there's a sense of, well, this doesn't look like a place I want to be. There's nothing terribly interesting about it, but the photo itself evokes a sense of like, I've been here. It's familiar, and it's not really a place that I would want to find myself.
Yeah, but also corners and like walls that like are hiding little details, right? Like it invites you wanting to just like peek around every corner to get a full view of this thing.
What I remember most is the text that accompanies the photo, which is really it's a part of the whole thing, which is like, this is the back rooms. It smells dank. There's the faint buzz of this fluorescent lighting. There's no sound. And, you know, you don't want to make any sound because you don't know what's down here. And it's like, ugh, what?
Yeah, God save you if you God hear something wandering around nearby, because it sure as hell heard you.
Sure as hell heard you, yep.
Well, it's funny, the very first sentence about it is, if you're not careful and you noclip out of reality. I think that's what's so interesting is this feels, I don't think Mark was a video game head when he was writing House of Leaves, potentially, but the Backrooms feels so video game coded, right? Yes. Which is fun that it's inspired all of this. Like, even the term noclip, to just break through the bounds of reality, this feels... Like when I'm sure else, but you watch some of those like videos of like, hey, here's a game you love, and we broke the camera and we clipped out in the walls, and we found a hidden level they never finished, or like here's a model or something you never got to see in the game. We put the camera there, like what is normally a bug, but like here is forgotten abandoned spaces.
It's like, ooh, and some of it's like, ooh, this is abandoned for a reason. You shouldn't be here, you know?
That's the most part. It's forbidden, right? Yeah, like it is. And I noticed, and so how much of the back rooms, I mean, we referenced, there's a bunch of different ones, right? Yeah, it's spread into 1,000 other creators. Oh, sure. But I guess the core one is the Kane
Pixels.
Parsons, aka Kane Pixels, Backroom series.
I scoured those videos, Chad. I've seen them. So they were like transformative because they were so well done. And so, you know, if you were able to capture something infinite, something endless, you know, that's a really amazing way to do it. Those, when you said like no clip, right? That's what happens in those videos where it's like, it's very, you kind of just trip into it. And anybody, any unwitting soul could find themselves potentially in the back rooms. And I think that's what's so scary is that it's not choosy. There's a part of our reality in this Backrooms universe that is susceptible to glitching. And if you fall into it, you know, I love how it's presented, even because it's believable, right? It's believable the way these people are like, I don't know if there's a... I mean,
they kind of just find, like, they find little bugs in the universe, right? It's like, it's so the way good. You win a video game, you're like, oh, they missed this little corner of the level and I fell through and it killed me. Ah, fuck. This is the main kind of the ones that are called the found footage ones, sort of the longer movies, kind of follow individual random civilians that are... You know, like the first one is just some kids shooting a movie with a monkey mask, right? And he just trips backward. Next thing he knows, he's in the back rooms.
Yep.
Later on, there's like a found footage shoot of cool, like a girl in her garage. Like, I found this 2x2 square and I've taped it off. Look, I'm pouring paper through it. And then she falls through too. So there's like kind of reasons for them to have cameras, right? So it was a fun.
That was the first one I ever, watched. The first back rooms was the girl falling through. And I think her being so scared was so compelling. It was like, she was like, wow, this actually happened. Like, this lady got lost. This happened.
Well, it's also, it's kind of genius in terms of, and sorry to get too industry, Elspeth, like I hear notes from executives all the time when I'm working on animated shows about like audience retention and like keeping them invested.
Yeah.
And I think we've now suffered several years where the mystery box of, to use a J.J. Abrams term, it has to be so compelling because their executives are worried you will like go to your phone instead or just like, I don't care. Like, you got to make them want to keep their eyes on it.
Mm-hmm.
That it feels like the back rooms is constantly every 2 seconds. Like, well, there's one more corner.
Yes.
What around that corner?
Yes.
What's around that? what's around that? And just kind of stringing you along, and not necessarily a bad way.
Oh no, it's the best. It's the best way. I mean, being strung along by your own fear, where you're like, listen, I'm signing up for something scary here, and I fully understand that. But it's when it's done so convincingly, and there's not just a story, but it feels like it's just taken right out of our world, right? It just got taken out of our line of documentary. It's not just found footage. It's like, yeah, this feels so realistic. The mall one, the shopping mall one, the longest, oldest view, I think it's called.
Oh yeah, yeah. So that now is like the new series, it seems. To get maybe you already know this, Elspeth, but just share with the audience. It looks like, you know, the Backrooms is still going. The latest one was this year in February 12th, 2025. And the core of those videos, beyond the found footage ones that you and I are talking about, are sort of this like kind of portal, lethal company, like a corporation, a scientist company called Async has found a permanent doorway into the Backrooms, and you are following these hazmat suits, faceless employees investigating, right? And sometimes they find a monster, or sometimes you're just seeing their process. Sort of the more official than what we're doing in the House of Leaves, right?
Yeah.
Trying to control this chaos. I feel like House of Leaves, honestly, Navidson did a better job. Like, there's one of the the Backrooms videos where it's like the 18th video, they are finally disconnecting one of the halogen lights.
Yes.
And like trying to see what it's made of. I'm like, that you're just now doing that? Right. Like that was like Davidson did that way early on of getting a soil sample.
Yes.
But later on, it's as it's gone on around 2022, A24 bid on the rights to the film The Backrooms by Kane Parsons attached. It's got all the big Hollywood celebs, James Wan and Sean Levy, and a writer who has no history doing horror is writing it.
What?
Oh. I'm sure I'm being a little cynical, but it feels like now the studios have caught on to the Backrooms. We're going to do a movie about it. But also, like, did you ever see that Slender Man movie?
I did not. Like I did.
It's like 7 years too late. It's bad. Oh, no. They can't really get into it because there's real world history, right? Of those like girls who killed their friend in real life and said Slender Man made them did it. What? So it kind of made them like pull back on the... It's interesting to see the Hollywood system kind of latch on. And then around the same time, Kane Parsons announced the... Well, yeah, you blank on the title. You already said it, Elspeth. The upside, the lowest levels.
The oldest view, yeah.
The oldest view, which is like a mall exploration series, right?
And also, dude, I had no idea about they were already like casting and writing, and I have no faith. Like, I feel bad because I'm just a cynical, but I have no faith that they're going to be able to do it well because it just is such an idea that is born out of a collection of ideas that, especially if somebody's going in there not knowing how to write horror, and this is a genre of horror hitherto untouched by cinema. You're telling me that this person's just going to dive on in there without knowing about, like, this history?
I don't want to... Yeah, maybe I'm coming in too hard on it. This guy named Roberto Patino is writing it. He had written on HBO shows like DMZ and Westworld and Sons of Anarchy. So, like, clearly a seasoned writer.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something about equivalent of, like, is this your passion project versus is this what your studio attached you to?
Right.
Like,
and sure. That's going to be difficult to... Yeah, I want it to be good. I really do. I had low expectations for the Super Mario Brothers movie, and I got blown out of the water. I thought that was absolutely... I thought it was a crowning achievement, and I really don't even like Chris Pratt that much. I was like, okay, I'm on board with this.
I don't think he was a good Mario, but I think there were some good...
There were
I'm biased. My good friend Ed Scudder was head of story on that, doing all the boards. And like a lot of those sequences, like when Mario runs across New York and like it suddenly becomes 2D, or like the Rainbow Road fights, he boarded all of those and they pop. Like they're really, really good.
Oh, that sequence is amazing when it goes from 3D to 2D. It's such a beautiful like reference to, hey, this is how it started off, remember? Like,
yeah.
That's what I want.
Really
the
good visuals in there.
Yeah. Like I hope that someone or all of the people, preferably all of the people, know what they're... I don't know how you could do that, right? Like, how do you get involved with something that's not... All right, we're getting into...
Well, the money's so good.
The money.
Yeah.
But also, like, if you don't put your heart and soul into it, does it really feel like it's worth it? you know? And if you don't have an idea of what it is it worth it to make even?
Well, also here's the thing too, and like going into like sort of watching, and maybe it's because I binged all of them all in a weekend, like going through all 22 or so of the Backrooms videos, you can tell Kane Parsons is like building a story, right? You're getting more and more of these like async company. They're getting a little bit of a theme there, and there's a little bit of a narrative. Like five episodes in, one of the guys gets separated from his group, and the room seems to shift, and then he like wanders into a lab he hasn't seen before, and then like episode 19, they run into that guy, and like, oh, the back room's time traveled him 2 months, and
yes,
now he's crazy.
Yes.
Like, so there's a small story, I don't know. I'm just thinking like in terms of a studio produced Hollywood film. They're going to want a more normal, you know, three-act structure of a story. Yeah. And I just don't, including answering more like, what are the back rooms?
Yeah.
And I don't think any answer is like satisfying.
No. I think that's just it, is that if there were some kind of like, oh, here's what it is, that's almost like trying to understand, and forgive my hubris, that's like trying to understand God, where we're like,
this is
something that has been so not just grown out of our control as humans, but like something beyond our comprehension. And to try and understand that and make it like into a, you know, a nice little hour and a half movie, it's like, I don't know if you're really going to be able to do that. Because what we experience as the audience is exactly what the person in the video experiences. They're filming it and we're with them. We're experiencing their terror with them. We're scanning every single corner because they are. And because they don't know, we don't know. And I love that. I think that's an element that should not be incorporated, because that's what a lot of movies will try and do, is they give you this exposition, they give you clarification. I don't want that. I want to experience this absence of clarity.
Yeah.
That's
the
what makes it
is,
so
is
scary. Yes. Oh,
well,
my God.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fear of the unknown is like the biggest. The only thing to fear is fear itself. Like that. Fear of the unknown is really.
All these things the presidents have said about scary things.
Right.
But well, it's funny, like the you can tell even the Backroom series, I don't envy Kane Parsons, and that like you can feel that he has to, every video he has to propel it forward a little bit more to keep the audience engaged, right? If you just kept showing more static shots of hallways, people are going to burn out. And each of these had like 2 million views.
Yeah.
But there's like, oh, okay, well, maybe there's like a life form. There's like a weird stick figure guy. It's like so Slenderman coded. I think the first one you saw, you see it, and that way it's like in a fungus kind of nest. And then it starts, like, I don't want to know what that is, though. And also, the more you show of it, the less scary it is.
I don't care if this thing is just walking asbestos. I do not want to know that it's... It's something that I can't understand. Show me horrors beyond my comprehension, bro. Like, that is literally what I want, and that's what Backrooms, it still hits that almost dopamine release for me. We're like, yes, I love and I hate being able to predict something, right? Where it's like, called that.
Yeah.
Man, they couldn't have written that any more clearer, could they? Like, we're being led as audience members. We're being, by the nose, whatever they want to show us, whatever they want us to understand, it's like, the way that it's shown, the way that we get the story is only gleaning it slightly through these characters and their terror. And one of my favorite Backrooms videos that Kane Parsons did was, I think it was the one of the scientists who tumbles down one of these holes, and you can hear it's again, it's so like, it's what people would do. It's what people do. They would check on each other, be like, hey, are you okay? Are you fine? We're gonna get help. Don't worry. We're gonna get you out of there as soon as possible. But he's stuck down there. And so he starts wandering, and it's like, he's still keeping in touch with people. He's describing his findings. There is some miscommunication. There's some static problems, but he hears somebody. He hears somebody. And so he's like, yo, wait a minute. Is there somebody else trapped down here? And I think that that's like a, I don't know what I would do in that instance, because was he looking at it from a point, from a perspective of terror? Was he scared yet? Because there is a point in that video where he becomes lose your mind, shit your pants, terrified. But up until that point, he was a scientist. So I think it's really interesting.
Presumably, presumably these people have some sort of degrees
and
they're not just
right. I say scientists because they're not just they're performing a test, right? They're performing an experiment. They're venturing science. It's they're doing something. They're marking it, and I feel like these characters are so realistic and logical about it until something happens and it's like, yo, that actually, dude, this is so, it's so fucked up. It's so fucked up.
Yeah, oh, you know, speaking of scientists, I think my favorite part of Backrooms that he's established so far, and I'm sure it'll come across, there's no way they won't do this for some version of it, is midway through the series, you are starting to get see, like, Async, which is the scientist company that's made this doorway, like, the business side of it is starting to turn. Do you see that one where it's like an informational video, which is essentially their presentation to investors of, like, here's how we can make money off the Backrooms.
Yes.
And we will use it as storage or office spaces. Yep. And they're like, making apartments. Up like,
look at all these, all these ways that we can fit people into. This will solve the housing crisis. Like, no.
it's logistically also still not like, well, you guys probably need more than one doorway in to do this, but also I could buy a company that would be funding this purely on a like, oh, this isn't going to lead to renovations in science. You know, this isn't going to change how we view reality. Yeah. There's probably some scientists feel that way. But the business people are like, you telling me we could just like make this a rent-a-hall center? Like, and just put some trucks in here and make some money and we own all of this? Like, trying to own the moon kind of stuff, shit? Like, that is compelling and depressing, and I could buy that happening.
Yes, I absolutely could buy it. It's cynical, right? It's a cynical take on like, hey, also, because this is the same, let's view it as the same world that we, you and I live in, that same world would be driven by capitalism. That same world would be looking at the Backrooms as a, well, how can we profit? How can we look at this?
Ignoring and there's been dead bodies and a string man attacking people.
That this is just a horror of quantum proportions. We can make money off of this. And I guess that's really just the planet at large, isn't it?
Would you move into the Backrooms?
I just don't know, Chad. I just don't know if I could. Because you'd have to really be sold. You'd have to sell it to the public. Like, how would you even sell that? How would you sell a space?
Yeah, because if you just say we found underground space, there. I mean, that would destroy society, right? There's already like conspiracy theorists who are obsessed with like, you know, not just flat Earth, but like hollow Earth. This would essentially make them all
hollow Earth.
There would
Earth
be religious
stuff.
Groups obsessed with it. I think it'd actually be kind of interesting to explore in the Backrooms.
Yes.
Cults, right? Yes. And there's other media that has explored this.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just something.
Well, I mean, you may think the same one. I've still yet to. I'm the only person in LA who hasn't seen Severance. But the creator of Severance said that the Backrooms was an inspiration for them. I don't know if it gets into like. I know I've seen what it looks like in Severance, like office space stuff, which is very liminal space.
Yes, very much.
I don't know if they've gotten into any version where like, so we're actually in another reality down here or anything.
Well, gosh, Chad, now I don't want to spoil it for you. That's one of my favorite shows of all time, and it is so good. I think it would behoove you to at least watch two episodes. Give yourself two episodes. First episode is definitely like, well, there's some questions here. Yeah, okay. But the second episode, I think it's really worth it. They get into the bread and butter of it, which is, oh, this is fucked up. And it definitely has Backrooms written all over it. I don't think that they necessarily go into like parallel universe type of thing, but they do go into... they go into the separation that you feel when you're in a liminal space like that, where you're like, yo, this is, I don't like it. Where are my windows? Where's the outside? Like this.
Is an evil company stuff, right?
Evil like that's, company, evil big old conglomerate. That's like, hey, this is, what are you doing? We don't know. But it's probably good. Probably this is fine. And it's, you know, it's not.
I think my favorite version of this besides House of Leaves is, have you played Control at all?
You know what, dude? I played like 3/4 of that game and I didn't finish it. I feel like I gotta go back to it.
What?
I know.
Elspeth, you keep stopping at these things.
I get overwhelmed. I get scared. And then I put it down. I'm like, okay, I'll return to it. And I just didn't. So I do have to finish Control. And I know that I think it got a remaster recently or
or at least
there's more
DLC connecting it to Alan Wake and there's a whole shared universe
they're
in
the universe
games.
And Alan Wake was a sick game too, so I really have to check it out. I check out Control and you check out Severance and we make a deal.
Well, I mean, like you got far enough into Control to know that like there's House of Leaves references in that. The for listeners, Control is very like inspired by SCP, which is another famous internet kind of like crowdsourced horror sort, which is also like comedy, right? These like kind of redacted documents of weird, spooky shit.
Which also but I think got started on 4chan. I want to say that a lot of that was.
I think
like
so. I think it's 4chan or something awful. Yeah, it's weird that these awful sites led to some of the most groundbreaking anonymous. Maybe because people were anonymous, so they didn't have to care about their like. names going out there, but or just cultural consensus kind of led to some sort of like crucible of ideas. I don't want to wax poetic too much about this, but there is something interesting about this internet horror coming from these places of, you know, these are the redacted files of something so scary you can barely comprehend, and you are like hunting through the redacted documents to find little words that will maybe give you some insight into what SCP-2025 is. So Control, right, which is very clearly built off of this, like this is the organization that controls this. They exist in a, you know, another house of leaves, a building that is bigger on the inside than the outside called the Oldest House. And they say, I hope it's not spoiling Control for you, Elspeth. I don't think this is a major story.
It's please, really I'm going to be playing it anyway. It's not, I got to do it, man. Don't worry.
This is the setting for it, and Jesse Faden, this character who has found this place for character reasons, is exploring this where they have set up shop, the Bureau of Control, in the Oldest House, knowing that it is a SCP or an altered place, I think is what they call them.
Yes.
Kind of in symbiotic relationship with it, where they're like, we have office spaces here, but we know there are local levels that freak us out. And we have like exploratory teams that will very much like the back rooms.
Yes.
Like rangers will just kind of go off and try to map stuff out, even if the house is constantly shifting and changing.
Yeah.
It's terrifying to think that someone goes to work there and just hopes they could get home that day.
Yeah, right.
But similar idea, I think, as
incredibly. And it's funny because I think I played Control before really getting into backroom stuff. So I think going back to Control and, you know, having finished House of Leaves and having all this backroom stuff in the arsenal, I think that would make for a really different experience. Because upon first playing it, I was like, well, I've played a lot of games like this, and I think I might have just written it off as like, well, this is just one of those fantastical sci-fi looking dealy doos, and I just didn't get into the lore as much as I really should have. And now I'm like a total lore head for stuff. I'm like, I gotta know.
Then you're gonna love it. Yeah, you gotta when you play Control again, not only beyond the stuff they're doing to like, oh, here's hints that Alan Wake is part of the same universe and Max Payne. They're every like I've never played a game where the collectible stuff that normally would be filler, just the little documents you find lying around, are all so good. I made it an effort to like, I'm going to 100% this game just because I want all the fiction, right? These little documents of like, here's a random story about one that stuck out to me was like, not connected to anything else. It's like one page and it's just a strange phone transcript of a phone operator picking up the line. And it's someone's like garbled voice going, help, I'm trapped in the lines. Don't hang up. If you hang up, I'll die. And like, alluding to some sort of horror that, you know, that's the end of their story. And then that's all you'll ever hear about.
That's
cool. Just a like cool little microfiction. Yes. That is really, really rad.
I love stuff like that where it's like you pick it up and it's a treat that you weren't expecting to read. And now it just adds so much more to the universe. And I really want to get back to it because I was streaming it. And sometimes on stream, you know, you can get pretty distracted. And I think that's a game that doesn't. You shouldn't be distracted while playing it, right? Where you're like, let's maybe focus your attention truly to the depth that this game offers. And there lots of games like that where you're like, hey, you can just do a little bit more deep diving. It's like Alan Wake too, right? Where it's very like, there's a lot of written, there's a lot of journals, there's a lot of just recollections and things that you pick up. And if you miss a lot of that, if you just treat it like a walking simulator, you're not going to have a good time. So it you must choose to immerse yourself in that universe. And now you're like, now you make me want to go back because it's like the third time I've heard about Control this year, but I'm like, I gotta go back and play this freaking game, dude.
Well, it's funny, you know, to connect us all to, so yeah, the original origin of having you back, I was supposed to talk about Lethal Company, which is based on this. I saw it was announced that, and they working on Control 2, right? And Remedy, if you play Alan Wake 2, is very much like there's hints of the Bureau of Control in that, and that Alan Wake is really just one paranormal event with one paranormal object, maybe Alan Wake is, or the typewriter is, in a giant world, right, of crazy shit.
Yes.
That while they're working on Control 2, they've also announced the next game will very much be a Lethal Company, Repo, all of these kind of like multiplayer games where you are playing as a group going into, I think, either the Oldest House or SCP type areas. I hope they go crazier with it, but like,
yes,
this genre is already established at this point.
Yes, I love that so much because anything that is procedurally generated or randomly generated, something that offers a certain, it's a familiar area, but it's unlike anything that you've experienced, right? Is what Lethal Company does really well is that it changes every time. It's a random seed and you don't know what version or what foundation you're getting. So if they do that, if they manage to do that with the sequel to Control and it's got other players in it, that would be absolutely killer, because I don't know if something's really been done like that in a fashion that is graphically intensive, right? Because Control is also a beautiful game. Like, it's,
yeah,
I remember
Remedy, all those games are, yeah, really not nailing something,
yeah,
down.
Yeah. And so I wonder, you know, if that'll be something that they can do without it being too much of a load on a PC, because the nice thing about Lethal Company and games like Lethal Company and Repo is that they're relatively small. Like, they're not like, yeah, massive games that are going to take up your computer. So doing something that has like a more immersive feel where the graphics are a bit more intensive, I want them to do it, you know, and have it be successful and have it be really pretty, but not like be a huge ton of memory on the compy.
Yeah, and all, yeah, I had to upgrade my video card just randomly too.
Backroom storage for my computer.
can you imagine the amount of servers we could put in? But it's funny you may say that, because I think it's also like the lower quality of Lethal Company or even like Repo, which is the newer one that's, mm-hmm, got kind of these like cute little Muppet puppet things.
Yeah.
Like, it does allow you to make scarier, yes, things, because, yes, you don't have to have as much detail to it.
Yeah. And that's really, I love that there's very little clarity in these games where you're like, oh, I'm in darkness and I can't see exactly what that is. That sucks, but still,
yeah,
good.
But it's got to feed this beast that, like, I'm kind of obsessed with, Elspeth, not just all of what we're talking about. Like, I think about like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes.
Maybe that's old hat now. Maybe kids are over it. I know the movie did well last year.
Yeah.
But like all of these internet horrors that really take off, I think have kind of a mystery box of, I hate using that term, right? J.J. Abrams has ruined all of us by saying it in writing these. You've heard that phrase before, right?
I have,
but like,
yeah,
it's what he sold Lost on, right? Mm-hmm. Which is also like, Lost is so compelling, and then you finally got to open the mystery box, and you're like, oh, it's Purgatory.
Yes. Okay. It's like, well, man,
sorry to ruin Lost for everyone. Sorry, by the way. It's basically just Purgatory.
Yep.
Like, it's never as compelling. So it does feel like the problem with a mystery box is, unless you have an amazing, great idea, you're kind of being a snake oil salesman with your story.
Yes.
Or you're promising something you can't pay off.
It's legit, dude. It was all a dream, right? Like, oh, okay, you're dreaming and you're waking up, and that's there's cop-out answers, right? And I feel like you can only do a cop-out answer for so long before people are like, well, you just wasted my time. You wasted my time with,
yeah,
this story.
Well, I think the backrooms, the videos are gonna run into this problem, if not the movie, just like if Kane, maybe the mall, the new mall series he did is almost giving him like a reset. Where like they gotta find something, right? Like, to bring it back to the backrooms, like, the biggest mystery I think that they have had, besides what is the string life form, right, was like early on, one set of these explorers found a room with sort of like a bunch of holes in the middle of the floor, mm-hmm, like these big square grid. And then that was one of the ones where the guys fell through, ugh, and encountered a monster.
Ugh.
But one other guy had made it across this like narrow walkway, which is nerve wracking in itself. Mm-hmm. It reminded me, I swear this tangent makes sense, Elspeth. Do you ever watch the show Alf?
I've never seen it, no.
But are you familiar with Alf, the talking puppet from the 80s?
Yes, yes.
There's famously the guy who played the dad in Alf, who I think also is like a real life criminal, so whatever, it's glad that this ruined him, was driven crazy. The cast is driven crazy because they're on a three camera sitcom set, but you normally have to worry about your blocking and walking around. Like, oh, I walk over here to the kitchen and I say, Alf, you got to stop eating the cat. That would already be a lot of work for an actor.
Yeah.
But apparently the set was filled with all of these secret holes the camera couldn't see, so that Alf and the puppeteer could keep popping up. So that meant that these actors had to, like, without looking down, navigate like pitfalls,
wow,
in this, which kind of made it a backrooms house. Like, it kind of,
yes,
made it this old 80s house that had all these things you could fall into. Anyway, so this part of the backrooms reminds me of that, right? There's this like comb of holes.
Yes.
And the first guy walks across, he's like, he opens a door on the other side. So you're already like, what's on that door?
Yeah.
He opens it up and he won't say his fucking words. He's like, you gotta see this.
Yep.
You gotta see what this is. Great. That video cuts out, you know, after the guy falls through the hole and barely dies and covers up. And then the next 15 videos of the back rooms is occasionally seeing the scientist team like putting down plywood mm-hmm. over the holes and putting down railings. And they have a little, like, they have a golf carts now. They've upgraded to golf carts. And then I think the second to last latest video, you see a guy finally walk through that door that we've been wondering what's through that door for yes. 2 years. Yes. If you've been following in real time. And to be honest, it's just more back rooms. Yep. Like, there's nothing, the wallpaper, I think the big thing is the wallpaper texture is starting to like blur mm-hmm. and stretch.
Yes.
Like kind of supernaturally. You're like, well, all right, yeah, that's somewhat interesting.
Well, I guess yeah, that's fun. I'm one of those people that is a delayed gratification person when it comes to games, when it comes to learning. I really appreciate like a really delayed story, something that I think that way you can sink your teeth into kind of detecting and trying to sleuth and see what's going on. But as you said earlier, it's got to be really compelling for the audience, right? So I think the Backrooms itself, because it's such a large universe, it is so compelling to me and still feels like one of those things where I'm on the edge of my seat every time I watch it. But one of the things that I love so dearly about this, and this is also House of Leaves, right? Is that
yeah. it's like a genre at this
it's
point.
It's a genre. Yeah. It's a genre of horror that presents itself in a scientific manner almost. And when like for example, one of the things we want to do is like, what the hell is going on? My brain is like, what's going on? That's the prevailing yeah. question. Why is this? Why is this here? What's going on? Are these people going to die? And instead, we're being fed. Well, the fibers in the carpet are from a specific area in
yeah,
Indonesia.
It's made of silicon.
And it's
yeah.
like you're getting all the minutia of this universe. The paint, as we can tell, is an off-white. The number 27 shade commonly found in blah blah blah. And you're just like, but why the fuck is it here? Like, what is going
yeah.
on? And the overarching question of what is going on is given to you, bit. By bit, by tantalizing bit, and I
drip fed to
it's
you.
Drip fed.
Yeah.
It's drip fed to you. I don't want an answer. I don't. I would be fine if they were like, we're just gonna keep going with this. I'd be like, great. That's the point, because it is an infinite expanse. And even though I'm like yearning for an answer, I also am fine without being given one. I'm fine with deducing it forever, because I think that there's so many different flavors, there's so many different ways that we could conclude, but I don't want it to have a conclusion. It's just
very
odd.
It won't be as satisfying.
I would
no matter
be dissatisfied.
What.
I mean, yeah, like you said, I'd be like, I don't know, man. It's not going to be a good answer.
But I can feel like a younger generation hungering yes. for this. So you, I mean, it's great that you have this. It's like that marshmallow test that kids have.
Yeah.
You ever see that one where it's like, if you wait 5 minutes, you get 2 marshmallows. You can eat the marshmallow now, and the kids just eat the marshmallow.
Yep.
Like I could TikTok beyond the Backrooms Kane Parsons stuff. There's a whole like world of like CG made. It's always like 3 or 4 guys in suits. They're almost just like stormtroopers at this point, just like silly guys. And like, oh, we're going down slides now. And
oh,
like,
bizarre.
Oh, I don't know if we should go. Yeah. Right? Like you can feel like they need like an audience's desire. Like, well, I'm going to make mine a little bit more of a roller coaster
yeah.
ride.
Yeah.
Right. Like ramping sure. it up as opposed to that slow burn that you have the constitution to hold out
yeah,
for.
Yeah, and I think that's just me, right? And I don't, if anybody is like, no, I need this to have a succinct answer, because that's how I like my stories. I like there to be a plot. I like there to, if you're telling the story, then finish it, guy. You don't deserve all the time around the campfire, right? Like, end it at some point. I am the person that, if you want to wax poetic over a campfire, I'll just keep listening. If it's a great story, if it's a great journey, I'll keep taking it. I don't yearn for an answer, because I'm already invested in the adventure.
That's fucking awesome. I mean, props to you.
Also like the game that I want to end. I want it to have an ending. Does that make sense? Where it's like, this is a genre where I'm like, I don't think I could look at it and be like, oh yeah, that's just gonna die out. I think it's just gonna continue to be fleshed out. And I don't know.
Well, like, I mean, like Lethal Company, right?
Yeah.
I think the first thing I found when I played through it, and by the way, if you're listening, Patreon supporters can see that last month published some videos of me playing with Goosebuds patrons to do research for the Backrooms and Lethal Company, and I lost my shit. I screamed way too many times at spiders. Like, I think I was like, okay, so is there an end game? Is there the equivalent, which I think also kind of ruined Minecraft, the end game of like, is there the Ender Dragon or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Do I reach the final level of this where I kill, where I fight my boss or something. No, it just kind of goes on forever. It's a perpetual system.
Yeah.
And that's probably part of the charm of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hazard a bet. I mean, at least for me, that's my experience of it, because I think I'm that kind of gamer. And so I would, if anybody who's like, nah, Elspeth, you gotta conclude something, right? You gotta have a beginning and like a storytelling element and something that really wraps it up. I think that with games, that's difficult for me to even look at something as a solitary single effort even when it's done, right? Because there are so many sequels. There's so many ways that we revisit games.
Right.
There's so many ways that we add in things in remasters and we re-record things and we redo things. And because we like those gaming experiences so much, we don't necessarily consider it ended when the story is done. And so even if it looks at it and it's presented as like, well, this is just a one and done thing, there's still mystery there for me. There's still like,
yeah. That's the end of that questions. Encounter.
Yeah. Right? And I guess because the Backrooms is so it, you know, the idea of it hinges on quantum physics, right? Where you're like, we don't understand it. And it is moving all around all the time. And when we don't observe it, it moves around even more. And I mean, that's at least what I got from it, where it was like this generated area that just got out of hand. So I don't know, interesting to view it as like, it's this own like ship in a bottle where you can see what it is, but you don't quite understand.
Lightning
it.
In a bottle.
Yes, yeah.
Or maybe, also maybe ship in a bottle is a better metaphor, because it's like a perfect delicate thing that you could ruin by messing with.
Yes, exactly, dude. Where it's like, oh, I can see here what this is, and this part made me scream, and over here's the really nasty carpet. And if they ever change that and make it cleaner or tidier of a story, I'm gonna be really sad.
That's gonna be the part where the movie jumps the shark, where it's like the carpets are too clean.
They're too clean. They're too clean. It's too polished.
You already mentioned the new spinoff series that Kane Parsons is doing, but I do find it, I want to like read a 40 page analysis essay on what does it mean that there's like a younger generation obsessed with this sort of like liminal space horror that is coinciding with the abandonment of real world malls. Like, have you been in a real mall in a while, Elspeth?
I have. Yes, there actually there's a real mall in Cincinnati, and it is a cool place, Kenwood Mall. It ain't bad.
Okay, yeah. Is it still thriving?
It's thriving, dude. They're kicking ass. They're expanding. Okay, well, maybe I'm surprised at it, but I have.
Maybe it's just me.
I've seen abandoned malls for certain, and I've seen abandoned strip malls, and I've seen the ones that are just massive, like old ass JCPenney's that have nothing inside them.
Yeah. I walked through a Bed Bath & Beyond that was closing last year, and like. It wasn't spooky, but it was really poignant. It was just like, yeah, the shelves are stripped down and like this dismantling of a capitalist system and the mall is like empty and quiet. And there's the ones in LA at least, feel very much like an old relic. And the last time I went into one, you could feel the desperation. I was trying to meet. The only reason my wife and I even went in is we were just trying to like search for a wedding ring. And it's so empty, but they had like a DJ in the middle of the food court blasting like Chapel Run, which Chapel's great.
Yeah.
But it was like, how do you do, fellow kids? Like, will you hang out in the mall if there's a nightclub feeling at 2 p.m. here?
Yeah,
it
that's
was really bizarre.
It's definitely bizarre, dude. Yeah. I mean, I know that a lot of modern malls have that feeling where it's like you can see that the stores have closed down and the mall's not necessarily, it's not filled out, right? That happened God, dude, do you remember Scottsdale?
Oh yeah, I mean Scottsdale, Arizona. Is there a certain mall I'm not thinking of?
Not Arizona, actually. Scottsdale Mall in Northern Indiana. Do you ever remember?
Oh my God, of course, Scottsdale Mall. Yeah, that was a
very Backrooms-esque sort of thing when that place started closing, because they closed Scottsdale and then they demolished everything for a strip mall. And so Scottsdale was, I loved that place as a kid, but I watched it.
Was that off of 31? Right? Yeah,
It was right off Ireland and Miami, and.
Yeah, next to Christ the King, right? Where I used to go to middle school.
Really close to that area. And I loved it there. And I watched it. Chad, I watched it become that Backrooms element. I watched it become the oldest view, where shit is boarded up. The metal gates are down because there's nothing in there. It's just empty carpet space. There's no one there. And I think that's what hit me so hard with the Backrooms, was because I've seen a place where people needed to go where they were there. Yeah. There was community. It wasn't just necessity. It was like, I think I'll pick myself up a coffee or maybe like a new blouse. And you're not there because you're like, oh, I've got to do this. You're there because it's an experience. And it offered a sense of, yes, capitalism. Yes, this is making money. But there's also a sense of community there. There's like a little food court. I remember going to the food court, and there were like animatronics on the like walls that were up. They would be up in like the rafters where there was this cat that would move around, like this little black cat. And it was charming. There was charm about it. And I think seeing that charm dilapidated and nothing there and it being wasted is scary.
It's a shame, right? Yeah.
It's a shame. And it's as you say, it's poignant because these shelves offer nothing. They don't offer anything anymore. It's just it's a shell. It's a shell of what it was.
Yeah. And this has been brought up by much smarter people, but like this idea of like, we don't have third spaces anymore, right? You have like your home and your office. And I was obsessed with the movie Mallrats as a kid, that kind of like, you know, when Kevin Smith was really cooking, like this, like, there is something about like, there is a dedicated space. It's not that we all love Orange Julius or whatever, but like we are coming here removed from our jobs and from where we sleep and eat, and we're going to run into each other. That is missing now. I don't think we have, you know, maybe it's gaming lobbies now, but there is something missing. Maybe we sound like old people.
No. I 100%. A third space is absolutely necessary. And I love that term. I don't know if I've really read into that too much, but the idea of having something that is not just like you or the internet.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us kind of get lost in that. I love a bowling alley. I'll go to the bowling alley. Like, at one point I was going to a bowling alley like once a week, but it's like you just hit up your friends. You don't just go to hang out though, right? You don't know if like somebody's going to be there. You have to like plan it in advance. But a bowling alley, oh my God, you can bring anybody bowling, anybody at all. And it does not matter. You can create some sense of camaraderie with bowling. Shout out to bowling alleys.
Well, you're also saying like, well, before, like the idea of the mall, I think it was such a common place that you didn't have to coordinate with your friends. You could go to the mall and you had a decent shot of like, seeing I might run into a there. Kid from school that I know, right?
Yeah.
So like, partially also maybe if you're a socially awkward person who doesn't feel like they can invite people to go out and do things, you can almost like stumble into a social interaction that you wouldn't normally have.
Yeah.
I don't know that bowling is in Cincinnati, but like Elspeth, I also love bowling. I have a custom bowling ball at this point.
That's so sick.
Bowling in LA is so overpriced. It's like $60 a game now in LA. Like that's way criminal. Beyond what you consider a casual thing to do, right? It is totally bummed me out you can't. It's like a rich person sport somehow is bowling.
I'm floored, dude. A good bowling alley should smell like cigarettes. It should smell a little like, you know, maybe some fried food. There's like, it's not a fancy place by any stretch, but it's comfortable. I mean, to me, it's comfortable. It's familiar. I remember going to bowling alleys all the time and having one.
Chippewa Bowl, I'm trying to think of the other ones in South Bend.
Dude, yeah. Chippewa, there was Beacon. I went bowling a lot as a kid, but it is familiar in a way that you know that people are going to be there. And I think tying it back into the back rooms, when you're the only person there, that's when it's like, this now it's really unfamiliar. Now it's really
also
like,
what does everyone else know? Why? What do I not know about this place?
Right. Why is I should be so getting out of barren? Here? Yeah. Like this isn't, shouldn't people be here? Yeah. The idea that people exist even in the back rooms, like those videos allude to someone else having sat on a chair with that backpack with a little mat.
It was like a backpack.
They
like,
were there
living
at
here.
Some point and now they're not. There's evidence of people, but you're the only one there. Probably not a good sign.
One more, I think, evidence of why what we are saying is correct, Elspeth, is, I don't know if you know this, American Horror Stories, the spinoff series American Horror Story, which I don't know if you watched that show.
I stopped in like season two. I was like, this is kind of the same.
Yeah, get out.
Same.
It's pretty garbage. Okay. Pretty garbage. It's trash. It's trash. Okay. A lot of my gay friends love it. I think there's like a campness to it.
Okay.
I think they're pretty bad shows.
Okay.
American Horror Stories started spinning off into anthologies. I will fight creator Ryan Murphy on a hill someday. He's from IU, my state college, and he never came back or did anything for alumni or undergrads. That always chip my shoulder. Anyway, his show American Horrors, they did a Backrooms episode last year, and I've seen a little bit of it. The summary of it, I think, is all the mistakes we're talking about, where a guy from the from the Goodfellas or from the Sopranos.
Yeah.
And he was in like White Lotus season two. He's a guy, he's a writer, and wouldn't you know it, he's dealing with the loss of his son. And he finds himself in the back rooms, and it's like it's all the wrong aesthetic, Elspeth. It's like stocked shelves in a grocery that goes on endlessly. So it's like kind of gets the idea. And over the course of 44 minutes, he comes to understand that this is a cursed place where people who are grieving or overcome with guilt, they come here. And it's purgatory. Like, it's just like, and it tells you what this place is. Yeah. And it strips, I think, all the magic and horror out of it by telling you that, right?
Yeah, yeah. If it tells you that it's purgatory, right? We already don't understand purgatory. Humans are like, I mean, it's like, it's this place that it's the middle between the bad and the good. It's the plane of existence.
Yeah, unless people are religious to even believe in it.
Right. Yeah, so it's like, okay, it's purgatory. Great. But what you're essentially telling me, what answer you just gave me, is that I'll never know the answer, is that I'll never understand what this place actually is. It's just where the humans are sent if they want to grieve. And that's that universe, right? But it's not so cut and dry. It's just not that cut and dry. You can't tell somebody, oh, this is purgatory. Like, bimsh, you don't even understand what that means. Like, if you don't understand your own story, then stop trying to sell it to me, you know?
Yeah.
But I also like the idea. I like the concept of of something like purgatory, where it is a space that shouldn't exist, or doesn't, or you can't quantify it. Which I love that House of Leaves doesn't do that, right? It doesn't present it as like, oh, this is purgatory. Like, there are some religious ideas in the footnotes, but there's nothing that tells you specifically.
Yeah, this is what, like, it is. One of the explorers, I forget which one it is, basically has like a mental breakdown and snaps. And like, I think kind of the biggest action of House of Leaves is there's like a shoot off in a hallway between the different explorer groups.
Yes. Yes.
Like, but it's just paranoia and fear, and maybe one of them evokes God, but it's not really, right? It's not really a metaphor as much as the closest thing is the labyrinth and the Minotaur and the maze, which is from like Greek mythology.
Yeah.
That's as close as it gets to religion. Yes.
I think it's amazing because it deals with the very real elements of what human fear can do, of what human fear feels like when you're desperate. And people want to make up, you know, stories for this. They want to make up an explanation for the backrooms. But when you can't, that's when it's very like, oh my God, I'm not believing what I'm seeing. And so to just write it off as like, well, it's purgatory, and it's not necessarily like what you think it is. I would just not like anybody to presume, because it was also born of a community, right? Like this idea was so. It was so not just one person. It was influenced by a bunch of other
things. I mean, I felt that was the same way about. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess like Five Nights. You have Scott Cawthon has some sort of ownership over it, but that guy's a jerk. And like Slenderman's crowd ridden. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it's funny that all of these, the Hollywood's like several years too late, right? The Slenderman movie came out way too late. I think even though the Five Nights movie did well, I think it was like several years too late to really hit. I wouldn't be surprised if Backrooms comes out in like 2 years and the internet's already moved on past the Backrooms, right?
Yeah.
Like they've milked this premise as much as they can, and there's some new scary animatronic thing that kids are obsessed with.
I wonder, you know, because I think that it changes, but I love, this is going to sound weird, but new fear. I love new horror.
Yeah.
I love
stuff that
introduces concepts that we really haven't thought that would be scary. I mean, if I tried to explain this to my parents, they wouldn't really understand why it is so scary until they saw, you know, the monster, until they saw something that was like, oh, definitively this is horror now because this person's died. Definitively this is horror because we're seeing this person scream. For me, it's horrific. It's horrific off the bat. Right? It's horrific off the bat. It's a sense of dread. It's a sense of like, oh no. Oh, this is the worst thing.
I'm in danger.
And I don't know. And I love my folks, but I don't know if they would really grasp why it was so
scary. I think it's like a younger generational thing.
Yeah. It's just bizarre, man. It's bizarre.
I am curious now. I've seen, it's kind of soul crushing. There's like a whole generation of, I don't know, my parents are very old. They're like boomers, old boomers. Mm. In their 80s, and they fall for internet stuff all the time. They're part of that generation that is like, if you show them an AI video, they will think it's fully real. And like, there's this it's not my parents, but documented of like, I found out these YouTube videos my parents watch of, there was one of like Melania Trump singing at the inauguration that is so clearly fake.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, her, their parents thought it was true. Like, she's such a beautiful singer. And it's so nice that she did this. Like, I wonder if you could, like, show an older parents the back rooms and be like, this is real footage they found.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Would that just freak that? Would that freak them out at all, or would
that I have chat of that? I have no doubt. I have no doubt. You could absolutely show that to someone who does believe everything, you know, that is like presented, and as like this. Look at what they found. Maybe not with the Slender Man looking, you know, skinny asbestos.
Yeah, that might go one step too far.
One step too far, but because it is so. I mean, I'm thinking specifically of the Kane Pixels videos of Kane Parsons, but way that it's presented, it looks so damn good. And now you might be able to go back and say, okay, so those are elements of Blender. I know a little bit of what Blender is. I know the program that was used to make these images. I believe it was Blender, which is...
No, we haven't... I don't think we've said... I think the most impressive thing is he's made this all in Blender. There's one short. It's all made,
yeah.
Where one time one of the guys is walking is like, he's not really fully tracking with the floor. Mm-hmm. It's a little sloppy.
Yes.
But like,
yes.
It looks really good. It's very, very
convincing.
Impressive.
It's very convincing. And I think you absolutely could fool somebody into being like, look at what they found. This guy just fell into the earth. And that, if you believe it yourself, if you are able to believe it yourself, somebody else is going to be like, yo, that's actually found footage. So yeah, I think you could probably convince like maybe an octogenarian.
Joe Biden knew about the back rooms. He didn't tell anyone. He's been hiding everyone. He's been hiding the Hunter Biden's laptop in the back rooms.
These were created during COVID to house people. And it got out of control. This is why the stock market's tanking. This is where our taxes are going. This is why the earth is flat. Because
he's
all
wasting
this,
all this money.
It's all underneath it. It's just conspiracy after conspiracy. I think, I mean, shit, man. If people really are out here like, yes, I 100% believe it because they've been shown something on a screen and you just believe it. It's really easy to do that. But it's also like, you got to believe your eyes, bro. Believe your eyes and if it's actually there with you or not.
I think there's been one time an AI thing has gotten me. It was recently there was like, it looked like a behind the scenes Matrix photo where like Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss and Hugo Weaving were all like partying with beers or something. And it was just like innocent enough. I was like, I could buy that was real. And like, no, it's AI. Like, fuck, I fell for one. God damn it. I finally fell for one.
Oh no.
I'm terrified of losing my grip on that skill.
Same. And I think because if we're not constantly looking at what AI is doing and we're not looking at images and seeing like, oh, this is what it looks like now, this is what AI is capable, we're going to be liable to fall for something like that looks like, wow, this was just taken. This is a picture that got taken. And I hate even calling it AI. I wish we would call it something else because I don't think
it's, I know. In the animation community.
By any stretch. I don't think ChatGPT is anything other than an amalgam of what people have dumped into it. It's regurgitation. Yeah. It's just a massive, massive regurgitation.
Someone's already writing in the term that, because I was in the Animation Guild and we were fighting over this for our contracts a lot last year, that the correct term is probably generative AI.
Yes, love but that. Still, yeah, generative. Because it's what it spits it back out. It's not having a conversation with you. It's answering your questions in a way that is statistically, out of what it's been fed, the best. If you have an AI and you only feed it the words yes and no, you are going to give it. And you don't also give it the context, right, with that yes and no. You don't also give it the language with the yes and no. You don't also give it the world experiences with the yes and no. You don't give it the societal structure that accompanies that yes or no. Like, it's just going to be a binary thing. But because ChatGPT, like the Backrooms, has all of this universe in it that's just been dumped into it by other people, it's this fully fleshed out thing that we're like, it's intelligent, and it's not.
It's definitely not. It's definitely not. It's definitely just pulling from other things.
Oh, it's just pulling, yeah.
The one thing about the back rooms, I thought like maybe the second found footage one of the guy that like, the crate, I couldn't believe actually the back rooms went this far, where he like finds a little crook and goes into what looks like a street level, like kind of just like a neighborhood, right? Fake stars.
Yes, that's one of the scariest ones.
Fake stars in the sky.
Yes.
And he goes into a house and it does feel sort of like bad generative AI where it's in a house, which should be the living room, and there's no furniture, just a bunch of like misspelled traffic signs. Yep. And like, so that makes it unsettling. it sure does feel like the equivalent of generative AI going five fingers on the hand instead of four.
Yes.
Or whatever. Like, yeah, who the fuck cares?
Will Smith eating pasta. I remember we all laughed at that. Remember, this was so goofy. Look at AI. I can't get it right. Ha ha. And now a year later, shit's just like, oh, we actually can't tell. Which means in 10 years, Chad, we're going to have some problems. We're going to have some problems by next
year.
We're
so fucked. I know. We're so fucked. I know.
If we don't have, I'm going to sound like an older person here, but if we don't have regulations on this, shit's going to be bad. Like, we're going to have.
No, we need some sort of, like, if it's generative AI, it has to need to have, like, a watermark on it or something.
We need, like, a tag or something, like, hey, made with AI. But even then, if you are really, truly believing that a pug can play an oboe and you're, like, fine with that, fine, dude. Fine. I don't want to interact with you. Like, you're lost to me as a human. Like, don't get me with that shit. Like, what do you think about this? I think that that's not real, ma'am.
I think that's not real, bro. I love that I'm coming. I mean, I already felt this way else, but I love this is reaffirming my dread about the world. And that's totally what I wanted the new Goosebuds to be.
Yeah.
Maybe we wrap.
Just a firm dread in the
world.
Yeah,
maybe we wrap that up here. Unless you have any other thoughts on the Back Rooms or House of Leaves or anything that you want to share.
Oh, gosh. You know what I can say is that I'm a person with opinions. I'm very, very passionate. But I will say, if you love a good story and you want to really sink your teeth into something that doesn't give you a clear-cut answer and you like a puzzle, read House of Leaves and check out the Backrooms lore. Because for anybody listening, if you want to talk about it, just hit me up. Because it is, I will talk about it all day. It's amazing. It's just the way that it has made us come together collectively and look at it as like, well, what the hell? What the hell is this? Why is it so scary? Why is it so scary? The why for me is the biggest part. Like, psychologically,
yeah,
it's amazing. So, yeah, I just check it out if you can.
Totally agree. Where should also they should check out your stuff,
well,
Elspeth?
Well, if you'd like to, come on by twitch.tv/Elspeth. That's my Twitch channel. I stream every so often. I usually let people know, like, the day of that I'm like, hey, I'll be live. I'm playing this. I've been recently dove back into Elder Scrolls Oblivion because that just came out, the remastered version. So I've been playing that. You can find me at twitch.tv/Elspeth. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Elspeth Eastman. Is my handle, and you can hit me up on there if you're like, hey, I gotta tell this lady something about my Backrooms opinions, and I'm gonna be like, yes, talk to me, tell me how I'm wrong, I wanna know.
Actually, let me throw out a gauntlet to any of the Goose Buddies. The way that Jimmy Kimmel, I think, challenges people to, like, videotape yourself telling your kids that Christmas is canceled or whatever he does.
Yeah.
I wanna challenge any Goose Buddies, show your parents an episode of Backrooms, videotape it, tell them it's real, and share it with us. Let us know. I want to know how this goes.
Dude, I kind of am really, I want to do that, but I love my folks and I don't want to be like, oh, I'm pulling the,
no,
I'm
pulling you, the oh, it's fine. You don't have to do it, Elspeth. Other people can do it to your parents.
Okay, all right. Listen, if you're like, I got to pull one over on my folks, go for it. See if that'll happen. Because now I'm like curious to really know, like, hey, this is real stuff. This is real stuff, guys. You got to believe it.
Also, check out Elspeth, your stuff. You're a great voice actor. Rift of the Necrodancer.
Cooks her
forever.
Yeah.
League of Legends. Yeah. I'm more of a Dota guy, but it's so cool that you're a League of Legends character.
I still love it. Riot's awesome. I'm really happy to have worked for them. And yeah, if you play League of Legends and you play Tristana, you're a cool person and I like you.
I like you, Elspeth. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Chad, thank you so much for having me talk about the scaries. This is, you know, Sunday scaries, but in the best way. Technically,
this has been this has been a little bit of a transition on the show and Goosebuds talking about more new modern stuff and things that we actually like necessarily as opposed to things we hate. It's been great to have you on. If you're listening to the show and you want to support the show, the reason we're able to keep doing this is because of our Patreon. You go to patreon.com/goosebuds. Supporting the show keeps the lights on. You can also get access to bonus episodes of Camp Goosebuds, dozens and dozens of episodes of me and the former host hanging out, cracking jokes and talking off topics. I'm sure House of Leaves has come up several times on those. And we're shifting the bonus episodes to be a little bit different. So there's the recently published videos of me playing Lethal Company, the patrons. That's only at the Camp Goosebuds level. And this weekend, I am recording me watching and hanging out a bootleg version of a Minecraft movie.
Oh my
without the effects finished.
Oh,
I'm really excited to watch that.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
So it's like Jack Black running around on a green screen. Gonna be really excited for that kind of Backrooms. You also get access to our Discord community, which is a real rad group of people. You get to guide the direction of the podcast. and you'll be immortalized forever at the end of episodes in the Book of Names. It'll be coming up after this. And you get ad-free versions of all the episodes at patreon.com/goosebutts. Thank you all for supporting the show. Anyone new, I love you as well. Elspeth, thank you so much again for being part of this.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure, Chad. Thanks so much for having me on board. And thanks everybody for listening as well.
Yeah, watch for random holes in the floor. And if I don't hear from you, I'll assume you get consumed by the backrooms.
Yeah. A good, fair assumption. Fair assumption.
All right. Until next time. Bye-bye. Bye. This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, forever immortalized in the Book of Names. Starting with Low Belly Hate Me, Hollis Hornbeak, Nathan Dozal, Mickey C, Hey Josh Rob, Afshin, Stealth, a beautifully fleshed skeleton Bates, Robert Moon, Jason Crooker, DM me, I'll tell you about the Rite Aid fraud. I gotta know what's going on at this Rite Aid. The Juggalobalist. Aiden is doing shots of Skittles Littles. Gregory D. Warren. Jar Jar Slinks. See the new Jar Jar in Fortnite? He's a Sith now. The meme is real. Chosen One. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Yanni Markovina. Carl. Carl, do you get sick if I'm doing the Llamas with Hats reference? When I say your name like that? That's what I'm doing every time. Let me know if that's okay. Brooke X. Anthony Mulberry, Christian Van Skeever, Jeremy Lowe, Zach Connor, Tevin Ticklebeam whispers, rich people are a scam, and releases the arrow. I know, I fly true arrow, fly true. Matt McClellan, Luke, Juan Jalapena, Matthew Sutton, Rustle Casberg, Xavier Jimenez Castillo, Kelsey Kinneman, Tobias Clark, Rena Kemp, MC Hamster, Limp Duck, Jonas Blotterman, Chris, not illegal to type guillotine schematics, N. You see that video of the guy like, oh, I'm cutting up lemons with a guillotine? Fucking rocks. Lamb, Jonas Ennevildsen, woof, 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 Kieran McNamara, Coleman Laguza, Diet Soda, A Pair of Scots, Meta for the Metaphor, new music coming soon. You better post that in the Discord, Meta. You better do that. Zambambino, Streak, Iroh Forte. Sounds like Robotnik's brother.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Burger's functioning replacement for Kevin's heart. Mutant Astronaut, congrats on the project, animation project. I haven't seen you do, dude. That's awesome. Some of Chad's bird friends. Nicholas Maloney. Need More Kimchi. Lucretia McEvil. Cameron Hansen. Logan Derby. Generally Depressing. Scott Wable. Philip Reynolds. Nate Bit G. Ryan R. Davis. Resident Lorcanagai. Gluten Free Rocky Mountain Oysters. Artist formerly known as Stinklich. Chooch Rules. He does. Ninja Breadmen, Megan McCormick Mason, Aaron Lord, Sprinkle Buns, Dr. Chocula, Mike Hart, SSJ Trogdor, Max Boltzmann, Cassandra Harris, Farah, Mike Spaghetti Jones, Quest Goblin Grader, Kyle O'Neill, Kiwi of Lerve, Logan Kilgus, Mr. Bumpy versus the Closet Monster versus Destructo. I gotta watch some more Bump in the Night. I gotta dig that up. Oh, I miss that show every time I read your name. Chevy LaGrange. Max is a box that shoots death. I think that's called a TV. That's a heavy satire I got there. I'm sorry, Max. I don't know why I did that. Blarbin. Odin's Eyehole. Problem Child 2 on DVD. Turaku. You did not mention it doesn't go doink in the anime. I don't know, Turaku. What are you saying now? Are you trying to confuse me? Let's talk. Dacius. Wade Norcross. Jafar says, melt the quicksand. If you melt it, I think it's just going to turn into glass, right? Ben Flolios Sayer. The Strays. Jolly Old Jules. Bob Cabbage. Smell of Ease, The Shrekonomicon, Soap, Spencer Lee Johnson. I had a little bit of a lisp, I said that, Spencer. I hope that's okay. Solve Siglium Liberanos. Okay, I took Latin in high school and college. I think that means figure out the sign. You'll read books at night. It's not right at all. Al and MC. Caleb doesn't have much to say this month. That's okay. Silence is a virtue. You know that guy that was yelling at the trumpet dude that one time in the famous meme? He's like, an artist respects the silence. Sometimes, Caleb, that's all you need. Tall glass of dumb bitch juice is ready for bed. I'm always ready for bed. R.L. Stein's leathery apocalyptic pepperoni nipples. Ugh. Treehouse of Jorge 6, the curse of Treehouse Myers. Nintendo 60 Yorts. Or Jorts. I don't know why I thought the J would be more of a Yort. Cuplix. Wyvern. Angus Keith. Better a Yeti with a flaw than a Bigfoot without. Wolf CIA. Big old dumb burb engaged to Ladybird fiance. Congrats again. That's pretty rad. Felix. Eric Wink. Every time I say it, Eric, I wink. You just can't hear it. Nathan Galindo. J. Fen Crane. Ari. Andrew. Ventus 13. Ben L. cursed as a Halloween gingerbread. Help! Well, Ben, you better watch out because next up is Snackwell's Cookie Monster. He's gonna eat ya. Or maybe you guys could be like allies. Avery. Snack Reiner, ally of the Cookie Monster. Zack Snyder, Fog Bread, Nick, and welcome to the Book of Names, NRG. Thank you also very, very much for supporting the show as we keep this going. We as in the Royal. I really, really appreciate all your guys' love and listens and sharing the show with people, especially y'all on the Patreon. Thank you all so much. See you next time. Bye-bye. You've reached the end of this episode of Goosebuds. Hosted and produced by Chad Quant. Hey, that's me. Associate produced by Heidi Butler. Edited by Ben Ravid. Art by Brock Gallagher. Theme music and interstitials by Seth Ernest. You can contact us at goosebuds@gmail.com. And please support the show and get access to bonus episodes and more at patreon.com/goosebuds.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.